Chapter 11, The Crystal Orb. Uriel began,
"A group of heroes arrived here about 1,500 years ago. They landed in a cave much smaller than this in England, near where my parents lived. The heroes managed to steal one talisman, but were quickly apprehended and executed. One of them, however, managed to escape. His conjoined name was Mars, but he chose to use his Earth name, Myrdan, to avoid being found. Myrdan spent the next 30 years studying the talisman and the prophecy. He became such an expert that he was hired by the Seven Kings as an advisor. Myrdan instructed the kings about how to care for the relics and how to best utilize their power. Eventually, he betrayed those kings by helping a later group of heroes steal all seven talismans at once. He convinced all seven kings to bring their talismans together and somehow separated them long enough for Janus from the current crop of heroes to steal them. And before you ask, no, I don't know how he managed to secret them away."
Uriel was glaring at Saturn's raised hand, but chose to ignore him and continue her story.
"Myrdan and Janus met the other heroes at the cave and combined the talismans to create a device which Myrdan had designed during his study of the objects. He called it a magic engine. They connected this engine to magical energy, and it began to spin. Moments later, a sort of rip appeared in the air, and they could see another world on the other side. Myrdan, Luna, Venus, and Terra stepped through, but the opening closed before Janus and Mars could pass. All six of them remained here, but the four who passed through were changed. Luna, Venus, and Terra were no longer conjoined with their Earth counterparts and reverted to their original hosts, Griella, Niminus, and Teresa. Myrdan also seemed slightly confused for a while, but eventually returned to his normal conjoined self."
Saturn had been furiously taking notes with a conjured pad and pencil. His sudden scream interrupted Uriel's story and made everyone in the room jump. He desperately said, "Uriel, I apologize for my interruption, but I must ask if you happen to recall the Earth names of the conjoined children." Uriel glared at him for ruining the mood of one of her better stories. Saturn pleaded,
"Please just tell me if Janus's Earth name was Arcturus."
The old dragon was shocked.
"Why, yes, it was, and of course I remember their names. Janus's host name was Janian, and his Earth visitor was Arcturus. Terra's names were Teresa and Anna. Venus's were Niminus and Vivian. Luna's were Luella and Morgana. And Mars's names were Altars and Mordred. Why do you ask?"
"OMG!" screamed Stavius and Janus.
"Morgana, Vivian, Anna, and Mordred? Those are all characters out of Arthurian legend. Are you talking about King Arthur and Merlin?"
Uriel looked surprised and answered,
"Well, yeah, I was going to say that Merlin changed his name to Merlin, certainly after that. However, I don't know whether Arcturus became a king on Earth. He was only 13 years old when I knew him, after all."
Stavius was still trying to comprehend that he was talking to a dragon with memories of meeting King Arthur and Merlin, and he couldn't speak. Janus, on the other hand, had no problem forming questions. He cried, "Wait, first you said your mother met Myrdan, and now it's your grandmother. Which is it? How did Janus manage to steal all seven talismans? How did they put them together? How did they connect the engine to magical energy? And why didn't it work? You aren't telling us anything useful." The boy had jumped up while saying this and was now inches from Uriel's gigantic nose. The old dragon drew back and complained,
"I can only remember what my ancestors knew. My grandmother didn't meet Merlin until several years after the magic engine was built, so she couldn't know the answers to any of those questions. Their magical engine, however, did cause a considerable ruckus for several years, until it finally exploded. Holes would appear in the air from time to time, and all sorts of items and creatures fell or walked into them. My grandmother's sister flew into one, and we never saw her again. You are right that both my mother and grandmother knew Merlin. He lived a very long time for a human, and became almost a part of our family. He said that my great-aunt arrived safely on the other side, and assured us that he was taking good care of her. It had to be terribly frightening for her, after all. since there are no other dragons in that world.
Uriel looked sad as she shared that last part. Dragons might warehouse their elders when they become ancient, but they apparently still cared about them. Saif said, it was impossible to predict where and when those air holes would pop open or what would fall through. We still blame air holes when we lose something, and we call someone an air hole if they say they're going to show up on a date but don't. Juice had walked into the room and added, my family thought Uncle Jerry had fallen through an air hole. It turns out he just went up to Canada because he heard there was excellent gardening up there. Everyone just stared at Juice in disbelief until he said, what? For Sarah said, you had a dragon uncle named Jerry? Juice simply replied, that was just his nickname. Nobody could pronounce his real one. I can understand that, chuckled Sarah, whose formal name is Alnanam. Saif and Juice's children had wandered into the room to see what was going on. Narayana turned to Uriel and complained, so you've shared some fascinating stories, but none of this is useful to us because none of your ancestors were actually there.
I'm sorry I can't be any more help, but none of my ancestors were there, and neither were the gods. They sometimes ask us to store their memories for them, but this happened so quickly that Mirrodin and the others were gone before the gods arrived, sighed Uriel. It's too bad you don't have Merlin's crystal orb.
Excuse me, said Janice, what do you mean by crystal orb?
Uriel exclaimed,
oh, Merlin somehow created a crystal orb to store his memories. Human brains are not built to store hundreds of years of memories, and as I said, Merlin lived a long time for a human. You could talk to his memories if he had his crystal orb, and it still worked, but it is ancient and surely long lost.
What did it look like? Asked Janice as he reached in his bag for the granite cube.
It was a crystal orb,
yelled Uriel with frustration.
It was a clear ball about 4 inches in diameter made of clear crystal.
Oh, I was hoping it was a granite cube with big letters on the sides, groaned Janice as his fingers dropped the cube back into his rucksack. He suddenly felt utterly embarrassed by his question. His friends all laughed, but Uriel swung her face toward him and excitedly said,
that's the box in which he stored it. Have you seen it?
Janice quickly withdrew the granite cube from the sack and showed it to Uriel.
You mean this? He asked with a trembling voice. There are the answers to all your questions, shrieked Uriel. Just open it up and see if it still works.
The others were no longer laughing. They were looking at Janice with amazement and respect. Janice, however, was wondering how he could open this thing up. He had studied it for weeks and came to the inescapable conclusion that it wasn't a box. It was a solid block of granite.
He whined, guys, I've been trying to figure this thing out ever since we got here, and I'm stumped. I'm sorry. How can you expect me to build a magic engine out of the talismans and save the world if I can't even open a stupid box?
Janice was back to feeling crushed by his inability to solve any problem. He was used to being the best magician around for his entire life, and now he couldn't even open a box. Elisa walked over to him and soothed, you know, you don't have to do this alone. You are a part of the team. Perhaps we can solve this if we all work together. Janice sniffled a soft thanks and handed her the cube. An hour later, the gods had become bored and left, and the dragons had wandered off to prepare a snack. The 7 humans were still utterly stumped as they sat by themselves in a circle around the small granite block.
Versera suggested that maybe it had seams that were eluded, but Staven turned off his ability to see illusions and confirmed that it was just a block of granite. Then Elisa suggested that Merlin had formed the cube by wrapping clay around his crystal ball and then transformed it into granite. This possibility caused quite a stir until Ops pointed out that there was absolutely no magical energy emanating from the cube. Someone or something would have to be maintaining the spell, or else the block would revert to clay.
10 minutes later, Stavius wordlessly jumped up and ran out of the room.
He must really have to pee, laughed Narayana.
I hate when that happens, grumbled Saturn, and everyone laughed with Narayana. Then Saturn hurried out of the room after Stavius, and everyone roared with laughter. The unexpected distraction from solving the granite cube riddle felt like a deep breath of fresh air. The entire group was rolling on the ground with uncontrollable laughter by the time Stavius returned. "What did I miss? What did I miss?" he asked in a panic. "Nothing at all," said Janus. Then he added, "Do you feel better?" And everyone howled again.
"What are you talking about?" asked Stavius. He was utterly perplexed. "I was just getting a rock."
"I've never heard it called that before," laughed Ops, and everyone doubled over again. "You guys are insane. Lend me your necklace for Sarah," grumbled Stavius. He was slightly upset that he was the cause of their laughter, but he was mostly angry at missing out on whatever was so funny. Sarah took off the necklace she always wore and handed it to Stavius. "What are you doing, Stavius?" she asked between giggles. "Watch and learn," said Stavius. Then he handed the limestone rock to Janus and asked, "Janus, would you please transform this rock into clay?" Janus casually waved his hand and the limestone rock turned into soft, malleable clay. Stavius flattened the clay and dropped Sarah's necklace on top. Then he folded it together and rolled it into a ball. "Hey! I want that necklace back, and it had better not be muddy," warned Rosera. "Don't worry, I have complete faith in Janus," answered Stavius as he squared the ball into a cube and drew an S on the top. "Okay, Janus, now remove your magical transformation," said Stavius. Janus waved his hand again, and everyone's eyes lit up with comprehension. Stavius's clay cube was solid limestone. He handed the block to Rosera, who passed it around to the others. "That is incredible, Stavius," marveled Ops. "There is no magical signature, nor need for anyone to maintain the transformation spell, because there is no spell. This is just a chunk of limestone with a necklace inside." Janus began, "So if I transform this block into sand..." Stavius completed his sentence. "Versera will get her necklace back with no mud on it." Narayana, who was holding the limestone cube, handed it to Versera. Janus transformed it to sand, which flowed through her fingers, leaving her necklace in the palm of her hand. Ops looked at her nephew with pride and amazement. "The one member of our team who cannot do magic is the one who invented a whole new way to use it. I am truly impressed, Stavius." The others began clapping, and Stavius was embarrassed by the attention for the first time in a very long time. He said, "Well, it is still just a theory. We won't know until we try it on Merlin's cube." His statement quieted the group, and Janus nervously pointed out that they would just destroy the cube if they were wrong. Elisa countered that the stone block wasn't much use as it was anyway. Narayana suggested taking a vote, and the team unanimously voted for Janus to transform the granite cube into a pile of sand. Well, it was unanimous except for Janus, and of course Saturn, who still hadn't returned. Janus started to cast the spell while holding the cube, but Versera stopped him. She suggested placing it on the ground so that he wouldn't accidentally drop it. Janus wholeheartedly agreed and set the block on a smooth patch of soft dirt. He waved his hand, and after a soft swishing sound, Merlin's transparent crystal ball was sitting in a pile of sand on the floor in front of him. There was a tremendous feeling of relief, but no one wanted to pick it up. Narayana finally asked, "So now what do we do?" "I don't know," asked Rosera. "Perhaps we should rub it." "It's not Aladdin's lamp," groaned Narayana as she picked it up. She hoped no one noticed her quick polish, but everyone did. Ops took the crystal sphere from Narayana and observed, "It seems that it has no power. Perhaps it's dead, or perhaps it has been sitting so long that it needs to be recharged." She handed the orb to Stavius, whose eyes grew large as he grasped the ball in his hands. It was cool and surprisingly heavy. "I have no idea how much power to feed this thing, nor how quickly I should charge it. I could blow it up," the hero complained. Janus laughed. "Yep, but as Narayana pointed out to me, it's not doing us any good like this. Everyone who thinks Stavius should give it his best shot, raise your hand." Everyone's hands were raised except Stavius when Saturn returned. He asked, "What did I miss?" Ops told him to be quiet and raise his hand. Stavius didn't want anything to do with this. The crystal ball was ancient and incredibly valuable. He didn't even want to hold it, much less try to charge it, but he didn't seem to have any choice. Stavius set the ball back down on the pile of sand and asked everyone to get behind him in case it exploded. The others hadn't considered this possibility and quickly complied. Stavius put his hand on the ball and transferred some magical energy into it from the ground. Nothing happened. He tried again with more power, but still, nothing happened. He tried again with even more power, and this time he felt a slight tug, as though the orb was attempting to pull the energy from him. "This thing seems to draw as much energy as a talisman," he muttered. Then, with a quick look for encouragement from his friends, Stavius unleashed a magical charge at full capacity. The effect was immediate. The crystal ball began to glow and sucked every bit of magical energy Stavius could feed it. Stavius's arms were tingling with heat as unbelievable amounts of energy flowed from the ground through his body and into the ball. Stavius didn't need to worry about overpowering the orb. He doubted he could have stopped if he had tried. In 30 seconds, which felt like an hour to Stavius, the globe had absorbed more magical energy than either of the talismans from the slave camp, and the process ended as quickly as it began. "How did you know when to stop?" asked Janice as he looked at the smoldering orb. "I didn't," admitted Stavius. "I guess the flow just stopped when it was full." A mist began to form on the far side of the crystal ball before anyone could ask what to do next. They stood in awe as it expanded beyond the confines of the ball and seemed to solidify into a pile of tattered gray cloth 8 feet in front of them. The cloth pile shuddered and mumbled, "What is this place? Where am I? This isn't my office. I can't believe that I'm stuck in another darn cave. Why can't I ever wake up on a beach?" Then the pile began to turn to face them. The pile of cloth wasn't just cloth. It was a man. He was a short, fat, old man with liver spots, a large nose, and long, stringy white hair hanging down around a bald spot covering the top of his head. He froze when he saw the others in the room. Then he straightened up, threateningly raised both hands and bellowed in a deep and booming voice, "Who dares summon the great warlock Merlin?" He stared at his shocked audience for a moment before doubling over with laughter. "I always wanted to do that," he choked out. "I just wish I had emerged facing you. Didn't anyone notice the arrow on the ball? You're supposed to point it toward you when you turn it on. I tried to explain it in the pictures on the box. Oh, well, I'm Merlin. Glad to meet you."